Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. And that actually is a really good thing because we're talking about empowerment today.
Yes, we are. It's one of my favorite subjects.
Yeah, me too. What's interesting, though, is we're empowering a generation of students who aren't always living the best life that we hope for them, right?
Yes, this is
we
true.
We got a lot of boneheads in the classroom sometimes right. or in front of us in whatever context.
Well, I was once one of those boneheads.
Hey, I was too.
In fact, so. I always, when I'm in front of students, I have to remind myself, remember how you were. Remember how you were. In middle school and high school, I wasn't a bad student. I actually made good grades, but I made good grades often with the bare minimum effort, you know? I'm sure that would never happen today.
No, and of course it never happens to me either. So
one of my goals when I was in eighth grade was to play the drums. I'm going to be in a band and play the drums, just like millions of other boys.
Yeah.
So my mom said, well, if you're going to learn to play drums, you got to learn music. You need to be in Mr. Benedict's chorus. You know,
this
the choir
is a really
plus.
Good mom tactic.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I'll buy you a drum set when you join the chorus.
Right. Yeah. So I joined the chorus, and I did not like the class. It was just he had sopranos, altos, tenors, basses, and I was in the tenors, and I didn't like it. And so every day I was looking for ways to get out of this class.
Yeah.
One particular day, I was not alone. Many boys wanted to get out of the class.
Yeah.
But my friends next to me said, why don't you pretend like you're sick, like really sick, and see if you can do this? Well, I was a bit of an actor, so
a thespian. If
midway,
you will.
Yes, that's right. Midway through this song, I put on this like I'm going to throw up. I'm so sorry, listeners. This is not very.
You've got to listen to this.
Yeah,
now,
that's right. It's not appealing, but I walk up. I'm really over-drama. In fact, so over-dramatizing, you'd think he would go, get back up in your seat.
I don't buy it for a second, yeah.
But I got to go. I pointed to the restroom. I didn't say a word because I would have laughed if I would have said anything.
Yeah.
And he quickly set me up. Well, everybody in the choir is laughing because they know exactly what's going on. And he gets mad at the choir. He goes, if somebody has to toss their cookies, you need to let them go and stop laughing. This is great. I stayed out the whole rest of the class, and it was a victory for me. But
a small win, if you will, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But this happens today.
It certainly does. To all the students that we lead, every single person listening to this has had a moment where you're just trying to get somebody to pay attention to what you're trying to do because you know it's important to them.
Well, didn't you have an early experience where you said you didn't have anybody's eyeballs?
Well, once you get started, you're so idealistic about I'm bringing these students something they need. They're going to thank me for showing up and giving me their giving them my wisdom. So I was teaching to a group of students, and I had this moment, which we used to do these workshops that were pretty long, and so I understand it was a long time. But there was a moment where I looked up, I was in the middle of talking, and I paused because I realized there's like 60 kids in the room while I'm talking, not a single pair of eyeballs. I can't see anybody's eyeballs.
Yeah, they're not looking at you.
They're somewhere else.
Yeah.
And not only that, because most of them are on their phones, you know, but I look down and the entire front row is asleep.
Really like, making a difference. In
I'm just changing lives one day at a
That's
time.
Right. Yeah.
So this is probably a dramatic example, but I do feel like we're in that situation a lot where it's like, why are these students, like, I know I'm talking about something that's important. Yeah. I know even that I'm talking about something that's relevant to their lives, but it just seems to fall on deaf ears sometimes.
Well, we hear from students today that say, I totally pass out in an algebra class or I pass out in whatever class.
Yeah.
And it is. It's hard to wow today's students even more than when we were in school.
So true.
But on top of that, they're not sleeping well very often. They're up doing some screen time or whatever. So we got a challenge in front of us, whether we're parents, teachers, coaches, employers, trying to engage the next generation that has a very short attention span.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, that's a huge challenge for us. And also, how do you make progress? Like, how do you even know that you're getting through to them? And there's a lot of ways that people have tried to do that, I think, over the years.
So, Andrew, I put together kind of four phases that I thought would be helpful for listeners today. And I'd love to walk through these with you and just kind of volley back and forth. But it seems to me like when we're talking about engaging students, the young people in front of us, there's four tiers that we need to think through, and each tier requires something more of us as their leader. So the first tier, the bottom tier, if you will, on this level is just mere attendance.
Yeah.
There are many educators out there that go, we're just trying to get their bodies in the room, in the building. You know, we're just trying to get them to attend. And attendance levels at some of the schools we work with are low.
Yes.
Dropouts and missing, and sometimes they're missing because of being bullied or whatever. But attendance is all about getting their bodies in the room. Talk about Julie Diaz. Yeah. She used to talk about some terms.
Yeah, Julie had a hilarious term. She called them bibs and bobs.
Yeah.
Bibs are bodies in the building. So I'm just trying to get them to show up to school at all, which was an issue when she first started. And then she talked about bobs, which are bodies out of the building, right? Which are the students who didn't show up to school at all. But the big challenge for her was, yes, I got to get them in the building. But then once they're in the building, that's what that bib is. I gotta figure out how to get them in the classroom, right?
That's right.
So they're supposed to be in math class. Instead, they're hanging out in the hallway chit-chatting with friends. And so there was really two tiers to that.
Yeah. So we're going to talk just a little bit about how do we begin at tier one. Tier two, after attendance, is involvement. So with attendance, you get their bodies in the room. With involvement, you get their will in the room.
Mm.
Once you get a student actually involved in the project or the assignment or the discussion, you actually now begin, they make a decision. They're going to be involved.
I'm here. Yes.
Yeah, right. So that would be a second tier. That would be a deeper tier that every teacher wants to get to once they've got their body in the room.
Yeah.
The next level is engagement. And that's where you get their minds in the room. So wouldn't you agree there's one, you and I both have been in front of students, all you got is their will,
but they
give a cliche answer, they give a predictable.
They roll their eyes or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. This is the answer seven or whatever. When you get engagement, this is now, I've got their mind. They are thinking with me on this. And of course, student engagement's been a hot topic for probably 20 years, maybe more so. And then finally, the last level would be empowerment.
Mm.
And I'm finding more and more educators are making a distinguishing divide between engagement and empowerment, student engagement, student empowerment. This is where, Andrew, I think you get their hearts in the room.
Wow.
So one, you get their bodies. Two, you get their will. Three, you get their minds. But the highest level, they are so engaged in the topic or the project or the task that they are absolutely, their heart is full on in. And that's where they come up with their own ideas.
Yeah.
They come up with, they use their imagination and creativity.
That's what I was just thinking is like the difference here is when you get to that final tier, you got them so engaged that they might actually continue to engage even when you're not there.
Yeah.
Which is what we've heard from so many different schools. Once we got the students fully in, they were empowered. We noticed they started doing stuff on the weekends. They started coming up with their own ideas and all of that. And that's one sure sign that you've made it to that level.
Absolutely. And this is where the teacher can move from commander to consultant.
Yes.
You're running with this ball, and I'm just going to kind of coach you along the way. Let me know if you have any questions. And boy, this is the ultimate experience in learning when students own it like this and they're running with the ball. Mm-hmm. So
that's good. What you talked about, and I know it fits to this list really well, is there's really a difference between these two terms. In fact, you've probably seen during your career a switch in these two terms because the phrase that used to be said all the time was, we need student engagement.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things we're discovering is there's a better way than just student engagement.
That's right. Well, with student engagement, you better be good. You're up against YouTube, you're up against Netflix, you're up against Hulu and Amazon Prime and everything else. So good luck with the production of your lesson plan or coach your talk on the sidelines. I think when you begin to turn ownership over to the student, now you don't need to be highly produced like a Netflix show. You can be raw and real because now they're running. It's their show.
Yeah.
Now, we've often talked about, gosh, a decade ago when Mack Brown, head football coach at Texas, the Texas Longhorn football team, began to turn practice over to his players. That was that was our first illustration at Growing Leaders. These people can actually turn it over to the students and get results.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Wonderful. Well, lots of people might be listening to this and saying, yep, good, I'm bought in. This is great. That sounds awesome. Where in the world and how in the world do I even start? You know, I'm already measuring maybe attendance. I'm already trying really hard to get students engaged in the classroom, but what would this empowerment really look like? And obviously, I love that we're pracademic here.
Yeah.
You want to get super practical. So talk to us about some of those steps.
Well, you're right, Andrew. We always try to be practical, but today it's going to be ultra practical. I would love to just talk over seven ideas that an educator or a coach or an employer could use. And then I want to do another seven where parents, most people that listen to this are a mom or a dad. You might have kids at home that you got to engage and empower. So I'd like to do these two lists and just get past all the fluff and just talk about ideas.
Practical ideas. Let's do it.
All right. So let's first start with educators and or coaches who are in front of students. The first idea would be to simply create problems. Yes, you heard that correctly. Create problems without offering solutions. So in other words, you make sure that the period of time you have with them, it actually launches with a dilemma, a problem, a challenge, and you don't offer the solution. Far too often as adults, we throw something out there. We say, what do you think? Nobody says anything, and then we quickly rush to answer our own question.
Yes.
So this is where you ask, you don't tell. You bring up a genuine dilemma in our world, and you suggest the students consider how to resolve it. Maybe you put them in teams, but they are launched into it through a mess. And that becomes their
message.
Here's
a big mess. What would you do about
it? That's
right. And this is a big challenge, I think, for all of us as educators and teachers. We were talking about it at the training we were at yesterday. It is very hard to be in a room where you feel like you have some answers, but you intentionally choose not to give those answers out because you know the greater benefit is going to be if I present this problem and don't provide the answer and instead ask the question of what would you do to solve this?
That's right. If I offer the answer, they're merely renting my answer.
Yes.
If they come up with the answer, they're owning it.
I love it. Love it.
Second idea is at least once a day, refuse to answer a student's question. Instead, encourage everyone in the class to look up the answers, to start digging. Thank you, Google, and see what they find. So this becomes more messy. It requires more time than just offering your pithy answer. But I think once a day it would be a great practice. I'm going to refuse to answer a question. I'm going to retrain my brain to not be the source of answers, but to be the one who's pushing them to dig on their own.
And if you think about the two competing values here, I think we're spot on for what we need in the 21st century. If my response is always to answer every question, then my value is memorization, right?
Yeah,
I want students to just memorize my answers.
Yeah.
If I refuse to answer the question, then I am valuing their ownership. I'm valuing their ability to research. I'm valuing their ability to work in a team to come up with an idea.
Yeah.
All of those things are huge needs in the 21st century. So why wouldn't we make that shift?
Yeah. And when I began my career, it really was, I've got an answer, memorize this.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to say, but it really was.
Yeah.
So, all right, number three, create disequilibrium. Now, this is that weird word that we don't often use in everyday conversation, but it's the awkward period of silence between the time a problem is clear in the minds of the kids and the moment a solution arises. So this is you're actually allowing for discomfort.
Mm.
You're allowing for this weird, this is awkward silence, but nothing's happening. And for some temperaments, depending on who you are, listener, this is hard for you because you don't like silence. They don't like silence. You can tell this is really weird. But I think we need to allow for silence and discomfort as they're looking things up. Whatever it is, I think this is just I call this a single step in itself because for me, I have to really train myself to think differently to allow for this pregnant, can I use that moment before the answer comes that I'm going, I know and you don't, but you need to figure this out.
Yeah. I was with a group of teachers, I think it was about a month ago, and one of the teachers was up talking, and he asked a question, and he it was like 2 seconds later, he said, okay, well, since I don't like silence, I'll just give it to you. And what was funny is my first thought in my brain was, I feel the exact opposite.
Mm.
I love silence. And it's for this reason, because I know when the room is silent, it is causing pain in the minds of the students I'm leading, and it's going to draw out of them eventually an answer.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere sometime that it's like if you give it 20 seconds, someone in the room, even the most introverted person in the room, is eventually going to speak up because it's so painful to have nothing being said.
But you and I both believe, Andrew, we don't change without pain.
Yes.
People don't change until they hurt enough that they have to,
yep.
know enough that they want to. Yeah, so it's just we need to allow for pain.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I say this, it flies in the face of everything our culture speaks today. We have pain relievers.
Yes.
We have medications. We want to reduce or diminish or maybe eliminate
yeah.
pain. And this
lawnmower
is
parents,
saying,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, let's plow through and get this thing done. I'm actually saying do the opposite.
Yeah.
Actually welcome the pain.
Yeah.
Okay? Number four, instead of traditional grading of papers, tests, or essays, communicate how many mistakes were made on the project and then turn them loose to find each one.
Mm.
So you've given the papers back and they got a C+ or whatever, and you go, you missed seven, you missed three, you've got to find which ones rather than telling them.
Yeah.
They've got to do the digging.
Yeah.
And at first they're going to hate it because
yes,
this is not the easy way you used to do it, Mrs. Smith or yeah. whatever. But it's now challenging. I actually think you can create a desire where they go, ooh, I want to find this. You
yeah.
know? It's and even, like a treasure hunt.
Yeah, and they could get a reward for it. So I'll yeah. give you your points back or I'll give
that's
you half
right.
your points back or whatever.
Yeah.
That's such a great idea, especially because, again, these are competing values, right? I'm not just yeah. valuing you memorized yeah. the answer for the test. I'm saying if you make a mistake...
Yeah.
If you work really hard,
yeah.
you can
yes.
recover from that, which is such a true statement
yeah.
in our world today. Kids need to learn that,
yeah.
you know?
Absolutely. I agree. Okay, good. Number five, choose a day and let students plan the entire lesson for the class period. In fact, let them record themselves teaching it and then evaluate themselves afterwards. So you and I have done this before. We've done it with people. In fact, when we do a Habitudes Intensive, we let them teach and we do the critiquing.
Yeah.
And they critique each other.
Yes.
This is just how learning happens best.
Yep.
In fact, you remove all the armchair quarterbacks from the room because they're about to go up and suddenly it's harder when I actually have to do it than when I watch somebody do it.
Absolutely, yes.
So teachers, if you're a teacher or if you give any kind of talk to a student, what if you say, I'm going to turn it over to you? It's the practice time, coach. It's the lesson time, teacher, or whatever. And you say, you're running this. You teach it. We got a camera going on or a phone.
Yeah.
And we're videotaping this. I love this idea. And by the way, they will be hard on themselves. I have noticed students will be harder on themselves sometimes than I am because I know what's coming. They think they're awesome.
Yeah.
And then they watch themselves and go, ooh,
oh,
that wasn't awesome, was it? You know,
yeah,
because
they start to become an armchair quarterback for themselves when
that's
they watch
right.
that video.
Yeah, yeah.
It is such an interesting thing. But time and again, what I hear after I provide an opportunity for them to do this for themselves
yeah.
is they'll say, I think I finally understand it now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
isn't that the
so
goal?
True.
Like,
yeah.
we're trying to get them to finally understand it. Well, you're not going to do it unless you let them plan the lesson, you know?
We've said it for years, but and I know you said it, listeners, as well. You never learn so much as when you have to teach it yourself.
Yep.
So that's what we're talking about here. All right, number six. In your next exam, actually write in the wrong answers in those blanks, the very ones that the students have given in class, and then let students grade the test, finding the proper answers. So along the course of the, you know, textbook that you've been teaching or the lesson plans, you're actually writing in the very things you heard them say last Tuesday, last week, last month, and you're writing it so they know that's familiar. Didn't Josh say that?
Yeah.
Or didn't I say that?
Yeah.
But you're going, now, these are wrong. Find the right ones. These are the ones you gave me. They're not right.
Yeah.
So again, it's another small twist on what we just said, but you're making them dig for the answers rather than expect you to spit out some answer that
yeah.
you've got.
Yeah. It's almost like they're grading the test instead of taking the test
yeah.
in some ways.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is really yep. good.
Good.
I love it.
All right. Number seven, the final one on this list is ask students to pick a topic that they feel they've mastered. Maybe it's playing a video game or a sport or a social media app, but then have them write down how they mastered it and then talk about it. This could be almost like a show and tell thing where every one of your 25 students, let's say, well, I've mastered whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever the
piano
video
or the video game or.
But then they're thinking like a teacher. They're going, well, how did I master this? Let me write down the 8 steps or 10 steps or whatever. And it may be Fortnite, I don't know, but but they're writing it down. But then they get to present, this is how I learned it. This will be one of the most engaging and empowering assignments you'll ever give. And maybe you do this already, but I just feel like this needs to be inserted into every semester. And by the way, coaches, you can do it with student athletes as well. What have you mastered at your position or at this part of the workout in the weight room or whatever?
Yeah.
Have them teach it to their teammates.
I love that. I love that because there's so much of a connection point. And if you don't make this effort, I think a lot of times students don't see it, right?
Yeah.
But if they knew, oh, yeah, I didn't get good at Fortnite till I spent a long time practicing.
Yeah.
And also I got advice from other people on how to do it. And also I went on a forum to find out which gun to use in which scenario. And all of a sudden you're realizing, oh, I've been studying Fortnite.
Yes.
It's like, okay, well, let's apply some of those things to this other really important subject in your life. And all of a sudden I think some bells go off and some things start to click together.
Yeah, you're right. So those are just a starter list for those that are in the profession of being in front of students. But before we sign off, Andrew, I'd love to do another list like that for moms and dads.
Love it.
So parents, you can also move students from engagement to empowerment in your very house with those kiddos. So let me offer up seven answers, and I'll let you volley back, Andrew, as you went. Number one, when taking a trip, ask your child to own a responsibility, such as maybe determining the route you take, handling the GPS, deciding when you'll make stops for food and what restaurant you go to, for fuel, for hotels, or what points of interest you'll focus on. I remember doing this with my own kids when they were younger, and they actually loved it. This was actually before GPS, but they actually loved picking some of the stops that we would make, and I distinctly remember one time we went a long time before we got food.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they didn't
had
like
a specific
restaurant
one in
mind.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And they had to learn, oh, I got to think about timing. Dad's diabetic, you know, that sort of thing. So that was kind of important.
Yeah, that's cool. What I love is, you know, growing up, road trips were so passive for me.
Yes.
I'm just in the back of them, you know, playing Game Boy or whatever it was. Yeah. What you did is you brought them into the trip, even as you were driving somewhere.
Right. Yeah. So. We don't get there unless you help.
Yeah. I love that.
All right. Number two, as they mature, begin turning over adult tasks to them as a point of learning, including doing their own laundry, paying for their car or insurance, choosing the menu for meals, even sitting down with you to experience paying the bills. Mm-hmm. So I've talked about Vicki Hamilton, one of our board members. She was noticing her two sons were feeling a little entitled when they were in middle school, and at the time she was a single mom. And so what she did was she sat down at the computer every month with one of her two sons, not both, and she'd say, here are the bills we need to pay. Which ones do we pay? Do we want the snack food, or we do not do the snack food to pay the electric bill? You know, and that was just huge for them. And it wasn't punitive. It was just they saw, oh, gosh, mom's got to make some decisions on what gets paid first. But it was also inviting them into the real world. Didn't you go through that? And didn't I go through that in our 20s when we got married and we go, holy smokes, I got more bills than I got paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? So,
and that feeling of getting to that point and thinking, I've not experienced this before is not a good one, which is why if you can do it in a controlled environment like what you're talking about. I had a family that I knew. When I got into college, I met a family, and this is one of the things they did as a rite of passage with their young kids is they would actually take a month when one of their kids was 13, and for the month, they had to run the whole family budget, you know, actually write the check to pay the bills and
I
all those kinds of things. And they're going to feel more confident when they get into their 20s
Absolutely.
And actually have to do those things.
Yeah. Both of our kids felt much more ready for college because my wife, Pam, had them doing their laundry all through high school.
Yeah.
So while many freshmen are weeping at the washing machine because they go, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
They go, oh, let me show you.
Yeah.
Because I've been doing this for 4 years. So
good.
Yep. Okay. Number three, if you have more than one child, ask the older ones to teach the young ones certain tasks or projects that they'll need to learn as they grow older. In other words, what if your 10-year-old taught your 6-year-old how to make their bed or load the dishwasher?
That's great.
So you can do it, and you are better, mom or dad. Of course you are. But as we just said, you never learn so much as when you have to teach somebody else. So this is just turning over. And, of course, the older child, Bethany, my oldest, my firstborn.
She loved this.
Loved teaching her her brother, who was 4 years younger and who listened to everything she said. So it was kind of fun.
That is
But
fun.
This is a win-win.
Yes.
The younger one learns and the older one learns better because they're teaching.
Yeah, you'll never see your older child making their bed so well as when they've just taught their younger brother or sister how to do it.
Gotta set the example.
That's good.
And you're walking out. Yes.
Yes, that's right.
All right. Number four, Sit down and pay the family bills together. We just mentioned that. But even though you're ultimately paying them, let them see the expenses and help choose what to buy and what to wait. We kind of mentioned this before, but this is, I would just want to underscore one thing. We have found it's better to do one child at a time so they don't lean on the other to make the decision. Or what do you think? They've got to act as though they are the lone bill payer and they're, or whatever the task, they're the lone one that's starting the lawnmower. That's really hard to pull up that, the pull on the lawnmower. We just noticed when we, even though we had two kids, there were some things that were good together. Like once in a while, I would have them watch the news together and come up with a problem and try to figure it out. But very often, it was really good one-on-one, just dad with son or mom with daughter or vice versa, and really have them work alone on an issue.
I love that. Yeah. I love it.
Yep. Number five, plan experiences or service projects together and share the responsibility with them or even give the responsibility to them. Allow them to feel others depending on their effort. So I remember when our kids were younger, we on a fairly regular basis went down to feed the homeless in Atlanta, Georgia. So at first it was, put the rubber gloves on and feed and, ooh, this smells funny. You know, you go through this initial traumatic
shocks.
Shocks. But eventually they got good at it. And once I knew they got good at it, I thought, okay, this is going to be old hat really soon. So we had our kids, we drove, but we had our kids get their friends. We had a group of kids together and our kids were the mentors. Mm. Oh, here's how you put your gloves on and here's how you serve the broccoli or whatever to these homeless people. So it was a win in that we were serving those that were underprivileged.
Yeah.
But it was a win because our kids were serving and teaching or leading. And I'm telling you, it paid off.
That's great. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Number six, regarding homework, let them determine when and where and how they'll get the task done. I would say as an adult, the key is for you to ask yourself, what's the point? If the point is indeed that they get their homework or chores finished, then how they do it should be up to them. I think sometimes, we've said this a million times, we're way too prescriptive.
Yeah.
This is how you do it, when you do it, what you do, and pretty soon, they're completely learning dependence on us.
Yeah.
But if you go, that's the job, and you can pick out however way you want, but you got to get that job done, and here's the deadline.
Yeah.
Then they feel more autonomy, and they feel more, I don't know, authority.
Yeah, and if you want my help, I'm available between 7 and 9, plan accordingly,
yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's right, yeah.
That is really interesting. I love that idea.
Yeah, yeah. So one last one. The seventh one is, I just mentioned this one word, don't think prescriptive, think descriptive in your leadership. In order for your young people to practice metacognition and hence even reduce the anxiety in their life, I think that actually works that way. Be sure you don't tell them to do something and prescribe every step along the way. So let me dig deeper on this. Prescriptive leadership is when you say, well, it's one of our habitudes, clean windows.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for just a second. Clean windows is in a brand new habitude book called Habitudes for Life-Giving Leaders. But we ask the question, when you say clean windows, is the word clean a verb you're telling them, get this done, or an adjective? I want clean windows at the end of this journey. If it's an adjective, you're turning over how they get it done to them.
Mm-hmm.
So far too often we go, okay, clean, if we're washing our car, clean the windshield, but here's how you got to do it. Now, there's nothing wicked about that, but now they're just going, man, dad knows this, I don't. Yeah. I hope I don't screw this up.
I'm doing dad's thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or you can say, figure out the best way to get the very cleanest windows in this car, and I bet you can do it. All of a sudden, there's belief and there's empowerment, not just engagement.
And creativity.
Yeah.
Which I love.
And sometimes they actually do it better than we do.
Yeah.
Which is really fun.
Because we're sometimes stuck in our ways, aren't we?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's great.
So, yep.
Well, these things, I think they're so simple, so easy, but they're also very practical, and they can have really, really amazing effects.
Yeah.
And we've seen time and again stories of young people who have experienced that.
Yeah. So let me close with one such story. I'll never forget. I visited the Allen ISD, Allen Independent School District in Texas, outside of Dallas. And I'm just so impressed with what they're doing there in many of their schools. But one high school I was in, they talked about how they'd really began to focus on CTE. Mm. And vocations for kids. So it's not just reading, writing, arithmetic, which seem to be rote in the minds of kids. It was, let's get ready for a career that you might, not for sure, but you might be interested in. Well, there was one particular student. I think he was either a freshman or sophomore. He was younger as a high school kid. But he was just very passive. In fact, if we go back to the attendant, you know, get them bodies in the room and minds in the room, well, he was at the lowest. They just were happy to get his body in the room in class. Yeah. Was not engaged. But he chose culinary arts. He thought, maybe I want to work with food. He'd watch the Food Network and some of the channels, some of the
made a few things at home, probably.
So he got, well, they noticed he got fully engaged, you know, and that was because he got to choose and own. But one particular night, one teacher told me about, and I got emotional even hearing the story. She said this very, very passive kid had shown up early, stayed late. The kids put on a full banquet for a parent group at the school. So there were hundreds of parents. They set the table, silverware, tablecloths.
Making food.
Made the food, prepared and presented the food on the plate. So it was very artistic. Cleaned up afterwards, washed the dishes, cleaned up the tablecloths. These kids were sweating by 10 o'clock that night. But this boy, who had been so passive before, approached his teacher at the end of the night and looked up at her. He's still a little kid. And he said, this was the best day of my life. And he said that because, not because it was easy, it was hard. Probably never worked harder in his life. But it was something he had been empowered. And that's what we're going for.
So. He's literally drying his hand from washing a bunch of dishes as he's saying this. That's the thing. It's like the difference is not keeping them from doing hard work. The difference is letting them do the things, letting them get their hands on it, empowering them to actually act. Love it. I love it. Well, if you're listening to this and thinking, I want more, you're very much like me because I always want to learn more and do more. A really great resource for you is going to be Marching Off the Map, the book that Tim and I wrote that came out in 2017. In that book, we talk about all about empowering students. We talk about utilizing metacognition. We talk about all of these same subjects and actually give even more advice than we have here about how to leverage metacognition in order to empower your students. So definitely check that out. MarchingOffTheMap.com is a great place to find that. As always, it's really helpful for us if you'll rate the podcast. Give it 5 stars, and that helps kind of get the word out about what we're doing here. If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore. Everywhere you are, just about. I don't think we're on Snapchat, but I think we're everywhere else. We love connecting with you online. In fact, we get a lot of comments about the podcast online, which is cool. If you have ideas for this podcast, suggestions for us, people you think we should interview, shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those suggestions from you all. Tim, thank you so much for leading us through this conversation. You guys go out there and empower your students, and we'll see you next time.